Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And I am...
See you later.
Hello and welcome back to MCU Later. I am Rich Fan with gravelly voice because it's that time of the year. And as always, we're here to review the latest and greatest in MCU. Join me as always is my main man, WH Park. WH, how are you doing?
I'm good. I just got Oasis tickets for 2025.
Ooh.
In August of 2025 in a stadium that is yet to be built here in Toronto, I'm going to go see Noel Gallagher and his ne'er-do-well brother, Liam, reunite, perform for almost $300 I have paid out.
Is that Canadian or U.S.?
Well, it's two-something U.S., so, you know, the weak dollar here in Canada compared to the U.S. dollar. but I'm going to be reunited with my former post-Perez co-host, Jojo Remy, his lovely wife, Christine. I saw Noel Gallagher in Tokyo with them, so it's come full circle. So I'm very excited. But here's the thing. I mean, that's like almost a year, just under a year away mm-hmm. from when we're recording this, Rich. They probably will break up by then. So I probably won't be going to see that because they won't.
Yeah, the Gallaghers, they kind of.
Yeah, they, you know, he'll say something about Liam's favorite football team and then it's done.
Yeah, he'll mention Man City and all.
Or, you know, it'll probably be where Liam does something because that's how they broke up in the first place because Liam's a baby. So,
hey, family is as family does. And speaking of, I have been telling us in the Post family about this guest. We've been like heralding her arrival, like Ebon Maw or like any
Silver
member.
Surfer.
Yeah, so I've been heralding your arrival, Julie. So Julie, just to give you guys a preamble, you just heard her voice. She opened a shop with her husband in like 5 minutes from my house. And my son and I came in the first day and we were instantly hooked because her dog was awesome. She was awesome. And her family members were awesome. And I've now brought coworkers there. I have a regular shop, Phantom of the Attic, as you guys know, down in Oakland because I worked at Pitt for 15 years. I now have a subscription with Julie and her folks just because they were so awesome. I was like, all right, I'm getting what is it? It's the one that you won't read, WH.
Hurt Eyes.
Huh? Which one?
Hurt Eyes by David Hopeless and Ibanez. It's a kind of dystopian monster book.
Yeah. Why won't I read that? Did I say?
I have Hurt Eyes, and then I also have the other one that's in the Energon universe. Which one is that?
Void Rivals?
Void Rivals, yes.
Void Rivals is excellent. That is always a favorite down at our house.
No, I do not mix G.I. Joe and Transformers. They don't mix. For me,
he won't join the party, Julie.
They have to separate. G.I. Joe has to be separate from the Transformers. It has to.
You're missing out, bro.
That's okay. I got a real American hero. I still got Larry Hama kicking it all these years later. It's okay. I'm good, fam.
So, Julie, why don't you talk a little bit about you? Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead. I messed up there. I just want you to talk a little bit about the shop. And what led you guys to kind of opening it? Because I think it's really cool where you opened it in Westview here in Pittsburgh and like the programs and stuff you guys do.
So, first of all, we kind of got to roll back to my NDC days. I used to work for Mr. Todd McDivitt out in Cranberry at the New Dimension Comics out there. And I met the absolute nerdiest, most adorable man. When he was coming in there and we fell in love, two dogs, a nerdy child, and a business later, we're still together. So basically when we found out that Dunkin' Comics in Westview was going under, that was the comic shop that my husband had gone to for years as a child. We kind of looked at each other with this crazy look and went, maybe. Nah, that's not possible. But lo and behold, things somehow, the planets and the stars aligned, you know, I used my Agatha Harkness magic, and K&J Comics and Games was born. Our real goal is to be a one-stop shop and community for anyone who walks through our door, whether you are a casual Marvel fan or the absolute nerdiest of nerdy, super magic fanboys. We want you to come in and hang out with us and chat with us. But really, at the heart of it, we want to create a place that's inclusive. I myself am bisexual, non-binary, and a woman in this industry, which, yes, that is still considered a minority, unfortunately. And my husband is a wheelchair user. So inclusivity, both in the case of access, you know, physical access, can a wheelchair user come through our store and make it, you know, make it through without having 20 different obstacles in their way to get their new books? And we've got our big old pride flag front and center with the Black, brown, and trans inclusions. Everybody's welcome in our family. We just want y'all to come in and have a good time and talk nerdy to me. I don't get out much other than my store. So you guys are my social life. Some more interesting than others, Rich. Some more interesting than others.
And it's for me, like, especially having my sons here, because my son, every WH knows Trey. We actually visited. I don't think you were in the day that we came through, or you guys were getting ready to go to the convention. So you were kind of loading stuff up. But when WH came down from Toronto to visit, we popped in and kind of got to see some of the stuff and
the 70% off. Was that the first store we went to?
Yeah.
When you picked me up from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, first place. Very lovely store.
Oh, thank you. We like kind of being the anti-shop, where we're not in a basement. It doesn't smell dubiously of stale weed and pee. There's bright lights, so, you know, you don't feel like you need to get your keys in your hand in a sketchy little corner. Comic book guy's not going to jump out and scare you.
But like I keep a handy roll of quarters in my pocket just in case comic book guy does jump out and try to scare me. Then I got to pop him in the mouth. But that's okay. No, like I really want to come back to Pittsburgh, come to your store, go back to a lot of these other stores that I sent this video to Rich about, like, a tour of all the best stores in Pittsburgh, and I've got a nice list. I've expanded my want list, Rich. So maybe if, you know, next time I'm in town, maybe I probably won't have that want list anymore because it'll probably be finished by then. But hey,
don't worry, I'll sell you all a different want list. And
we'll come to your store first, Julie. And I'm just gonna say all kinds of funny things to myself, because Rich doesn't always find me funny. But anyways.
I think he's great. Don't pay attention to him. And what I also think is great is that having Julie on, because we had some conversations before we did the podcast. One about like the idea of Agatha, witchcraft, all that fun stuff. And then also the idea of inclusivity as it came to Marvel. Because I think this series is one of the first times that they really had an opportunity to do more than just kind of lip service. And so before we get into the show proper, one of the articles I read in the MC News was the fact that this is the cheapest made MCU television show ever. And with all of the critical acclaim, one of the main reasons is because they stuck with practical movie magic as opposed to CGI. Julie, what have been your thoughts watching the series? And do you feel like you missed anything with the lack of CGI and the focus on more practical effects?
Well, first off, I basically am Agatha Harkness, the snarky, too much crime TV watching lesbian neighbor who is also obsessed with corn dogs and Aubrey Plaza. So I don't think you're missing anything. I love the tone. It's dark, but it's not blackout dark where you can't see the little hidden, you know, details and the mists and things on the road. And even, especially in the last episode with the burning and everything, a lot of times when you do that with CGI, it just ends up looking fake and cheap. And it didn't. I mean, it was actual, like, you know, steam rising off of their clothes and things like that. So the practical effects have been phenomenal. I don't think we're missing anything.
WH, how about you? Because one of the things when they had the lead, Brad Winterbaum, of MCU's kind of like television, he's the head of television streaming and animation. He mentioned this is kind of a practice run for the stuff they wanted to do with Daredevil. So do you think that with the stuff and the success or failure, whatever, how do you think of this? What do you think that means for shows like Daredevil in the future?
I think it's great because I really enjoy the look of the aesthetics of the show, especially any of the recent episodes directed by Rachel Goldberg, including the one we're going to talk about today. They're like, as long as like you have talented directors and you make the sets look good, I don't think you need CGI. I mean, maybe if when they're doing, you know, like some kind of magic battle at the end, maybe there's going to be some CGI there. But as for the most part, the story doesn't necessarily require you to like have too many special effects, like in terms of like computer generated imagery or anything like that. And again, like one thing I'm going to probably talk about a lot is like how great this episode looked and how well it was directed, because like there's so many nods to like 70s horror in this particular episode. The opening two episodes were directed by Jack Schaefer, and she was really going for that kind of like HBO crime show look, right? So, and then these Rachel Goldberg episodes are completely different. She's going for this aesthetic, the 70s aesthetic, which I really enjoy. And it really harkens back to like an era of movies that I don't think we see so much anymore in terms of like how they're filmed and how they're shot and things like that. So to see like these colors pop out, and then, you know, like there's this whole sequence that's really very much like Dario Argento's Suspiria, where they're looking like, I think Pat LaPone's character is looking at, Lilia is looking at these imageries of like witches burning and being tortured. And that's very much like, very much out of like Suspiria. And then there's all these like different kinds of like deep, you know, split focus shots and split screen shots that are very much like Brian De Palma from Carrie. And I'm just like, oh shit, that's great. And then there's, you know, the whole thing where we actually see the demon. I freaked out. I was like, I was taken aback. I'm like, oh my God, this show is fucking scary, man. This episode is freaking me out. It was all practical. I think that was a person in a suit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's great. I mean, I was just like, okay, you don't need some cheesy looking thing like out of the, you know, second Blade movie, you know, at the end where Wesley Snipes fighting something stupid looking. And I don't like the third act of Blade 2, to be honest with you. But, you know, but this looked great. I was like, damn, that's genuinely frightening. And that's what you want. It's like it's this perfect mix of like the humor that comes from the writing of the characters and of the interactions between all the actors. And then you have like things like this. If you're watching on YouTube, you're seeing this imagery of this demon. It's horrifying.
Yeah. And I really like that the fact that this stuff was all practical, because it made it so much easier. Now, we're going to do a quick jump before we get back to Agatha, because one movie that's coming out that will be relying a lot more on CGI, and you can see it if you notice in the left corner, a little bit of that green screen installed into the newspaper. These are stills from the set of Spider-Man Noir with one of my favorite actors ever, Mr. Nicolas J. Cage, the J is for savings, sitting on a stoop, contemplating whatever case he's working on as Spider-Man. WH, thoughts on this image, and are you looking forward to it? Because last week was when we finally realized, I didn't realize it was going to be a live action. I thought this was going to be animated like Into the Spider-Verse was. So that threw me for a loop, if I'm being honest.
I won't say I'm excited. I'm more curious. I'm interested. I'm not excited about it necessarily, because I feel like anything Sony related is like hit and miss. So, but yeah, I mean, I like the concept of Spider-Man noir. I like pulp heroes. I like things like, so Spider-Man mixed with The Shadow is interesting to me. It's played by Nicolas Cage, you know, sure. Why not? Like, I'll check it out. But I wouldn't say it's like atop my list of like, I cannot wait for this to come out. No, I can wait. It's okay. there's a lot of things I got to catch up on. So it's not something like, and again, like you're saying, it's probably going to be a lot of CGI. And then it's a Sony product, you know, and it's just them milking it so they don't have to give the license back to Marvel, you know. Come on, Kevin. You and Bob Iger, just go out and call Sony up, the parent company, and say, hey, we will buy Sony Pictures. How many billions will it take? Okay, and we're just going to put all the Sony Pictures classic stuff on Disney Plus, which to me, that's a bonus because they put out a lot of good films over the years, you know?
Listen, one of the things W.H. Julius, just so you know, he's been advocating for Disney to buy Sony for years now.
No, Sony Pictures.
They
don't have to make fucking Walkmans or anything like that.
Listen,
they just have to get Spider-Man back from fucking Sony.
I think they also need to buy the electronic division too, because I spent the early part of this week trying to buy a 30th anniversary PlayStation 5. And it looks like a PlayStation, which is like the craziest thing one would think 30 years ago. But guess what? All of them went to scalpers here in the United States. But Sony Entertainment of Japan set it up so that if you're going to buy it, you have to have at least 50 hours logged into your PlayStation account in the last 2 months. That way you make sure it's actually a person that plays video games and not someone trying to scalp a little bit.
When I'm in the Japan next month, do you want me to go buy you a PlayStation 5?
I would love that. If it's the 30th anniversary, I'm in, WH.
You have to send me the specs.
Instead of smuggling in drugs, you're going to be like smuggling in Sony PlayStation.
No, I'll declare it. Rich is going to pay the customs fee. He's going to pay the customs fee. It's okay.
You guys are legals. I like it.
Yeah. Especially with stuff like that. Like I don't need stuff that's like, hey, by the way, we got this on tape. We got them, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm only smuggling in my SH Figure Arts Boba Fett and Bucky from Falcon and the Winter Soldier figure, which I'm gonna get for a song at the used shops in either Nagoya or Tokyo, and no problem, Rich. Let me see how much it costs if it's gonna break my budget.
It's gonna break your budget.
Okay, well maybe not.
That's not your app.
Yeah. I don't want to say out loud how much I was willing to pay for this 30th anniversary.
But it might be cheaper in Japan. It might be cheaper in Japan itself if I'm physically in the country, you know what I'm saying? I'll take a look. I'll hit up my contacts up in Japan. I'll call up my boy Hiroshi Tanahashi for you. Wait a second.
I mean, listen, if Tanahashi can hook a brother up, I'm in. Julie, my craziness aside, what were your thoughts looking at this Spider-Man noir? Are you looking forward to it? Is it something that even appeals to you?
So honestly, I love Nicolas Cage when he is on that borderline of way, way, way too much and only just a little too much. So I think this could be great for him. I think that especially with almost like the kind of a wink and a nod and a little tip of the hat, I think he could be good in this role. I also... I'm really big fan of the fact that they didn't, you know, make him try to look like a kid again. Mm-hmm. You know, he just looks old and beat there. And I'm sorry, Spider-Man Noir in this day and age, I mean, how do you not do old and beat? I think everyone gets so used to seeing Spider-Man as this, you know, young, spry character. I think that, you know, with Into the Spider-Verse, we got kind of like dad stage, you know, Spider-Man. I'm interested to see like, you know, young, you know, granddad Spider-Man. You know, maybe he'll have a little bit of web dysfunction or something. I don't know. But, you know, I love the period. So I'm hopeful. We'll say cautiously optimistic. I know I'm in the minority. I've loved some of the stuff that Sony has done. I think when they just went whole ham with Venom, particularly in the rave scene with his little come out, and, you know, Venom kind of declaring himself separate from Eddie, and it worked. And I think that Nick Cage is just ham enough that this could work really, really well. So I'm sorry, WH, I gotta disagree with you, man.
That's okay. You just won't ever be back invited back to this show. Just kidding.
This guy.
Just kidding. It's now, okay.
One guy I want to invite.
Your friend double for his comics.
Oh, see, look what you did.
What? I'm paying double anyways because I'm Canadian.
So I get charged now Canadian prices. Now, this dude's priceless. Colin Farrell has been outstanding as the Penguin. I can't stand the fact they shortened his name to Oz Cobb, but he is playing exactly what I wanted in a Penguin character and never knew it. And it's essentially The Sopranos in Gotham City. Julie, have you watched The Penguin? And if so, what are your thoughts?
So I've watched a little bit of it. And I have to say, I love everything about this Batman universe that they've built, except for their choice of Batman. Yeah. I'm one of those lone holdouts that, you know, Robert Pattinson, while he's an amazing actor, just didn't stick the landing with Bruce Wayne with me. But everyone around him is just so mind-blowingly good. Colin Farrell is, oof, man. I mean, I never really thought of him as being truly sinister. Kind of like cartoonishly menacing at times, but, you know, he really feels just sinister and dirty. And it does, it feels like a mob movie in Gotham, and I love that. It almost kind of gives me like, I don't know if you remember the Gotham PD Brubaker series from years ago.
Yes.
And this kind of gives that like flip side vibe, which I really enjoy.
I'm glad you brought that up because one of my buddies, Sam McCoy, who if you do come back in two episodes, he'd be on with you, actually sent that to me to read. And I loved it. And the fact, like, oh, making connections. It's really cool. I love the fact that in this world, I was telling WH before you came on and we started recording, it was so interesting to see how little respect he gets and how he uses that as a weapon. Like, people ignore him. People basically see him as not a threat. And that's the most dangerous thing about him. And as we go through this journey alongside Oz, I've been really intrigued by it. And ultimately, it's a nice way to dovetail into this silly lady because Agatha has dumped all of her pretense of being the nice friend and she is in full sociopath mode. And I love it. What has been your thoughts? You said you're Agatha of the first three episodes before we got to episode four.
You know,
do you
what?
Like
I
the coven?
I, like Agatha, have never met a gay teen that I wouldn't adopt in like 30 seconds while still, you know, bashing their fashion sense and keeping that sarcasm rolling. Honestly, I wasn't joking when I said I connect with Agatha. I like that you see this kind of side of her where, yes, she's this power-hungry, kind of, you know, manipulative, devil-may-care bitch. But, I mean, she does have gravitas. In a lot of ways, you kind of see the things that she's lost for power, particularly with her son and, you know, that little moment that she has in this episode with Teen and then later with Aubrey Plaza. She's cartoonishly bad, but she's still got, you know, layers. And like I said, just that little bit of oomph. And I think that when you're a woman in this day and age, if you're, you know, forthright and powerful and intentional, you know, sometimes you do get cast as that, you know, crazy bitch who's going to roll over everything to get what you want, but that doesn't always mean that that's the only side of you. So I think that Catherine Hahn is just absolutely killing it, and I honestly don't think that there's a weak member of this cast. I love every single one of these folks on the screen so much.
The only thing I regret, honestly, is that Deborah Jo Rupp could not continue their journey with him because them going to a 70s motif and her not being there feels criminal.
We were robbed. We were robbed. We were robbed. But at the same time, like, I kind of feel like as these like poor group of folks go on, I kind of feel like, you know, having that like cartoony extra bit, you know, wasn't necessarily necessary. I mean, we loved Mrs. Hart. She did her thing. She drank all the wine, which I would have too. And unfortunately, she passed. But one thing I do want to mention that, you know, we're talking about the visuals of the show. How are we not discussing every bit of the costuming detail? Yeah. I especially love that you have Teen in this very kind of baby blue, soft, you know, vibe. And then you have Agatha and Rio just looking like just the absolute badass rock bitches that they are. And then you have the ladies in the middle. It's so nuanced to their characters. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And I really, WH, want to point out too, especially in the picture I have here, you can see the outfits for Agatha and Rio complement each other.
Yeah.
In a way where it's like almost a Sunny and Cher or Cher and Cher situation. And it's mesmerizing as they're standing next to each other.
I sent you this picture from this long forgotten 80s Marvel comic based on trying to capitalize on a singing sensation called Nightcat. It's kind of like a late 80s version of what they tried to do with Dazzler in the early 80s, but less successful. But I was like, when I saw Agatha with the headband, especially, I'm like, and the cleavage, I'm like, oh shit, is this a reference to Nightcat? Maybe I'm just projecting, but I thought it was funny. But I was watching New Rock Stars, and you know, like Teen is supposed to have this kind of like with the blue fur coat. It's kind of like Mick Jagger in the 70s, right? Jen is maybe channeling Diana Ross in the 70s.
I see more Donna Summers.
Donna Summers, that could be it. Yep. Alice is Janis Joplin with the sunglasses and the hair. And I love that Patti LuPone is supposed to be Liza Minnelli. I think that's fantastic. That's great.
That's a great one for one.
And then, you know, the whole referencing of Cher. I definitely think it's both. They're both like two coins of Cher. I think we get the hint of the relationship of the deeper relationship between Agatha and Rio. And
if you think that's a hint, WH, I'd hate to see what you call just the tip.
Well, hey, wait a sec. I didn't say that, by the way. I didn't make any innuendo, but I'm trying to be polite here, which is a rarity for me. So yes, we get this, the full blown, like basic confirmation that these two are lovers. Great. That's fantastic. I was reading something that maybe Rio is death.
Yes. So
maybe Thanos is going to show up all jealous and shit.
Well, listen, Rio Vidal, River of Life. So what leads at the end of the River of Life? Death. And that also helps when she says, if at the end where Agatha was, again, being very slick by holding the microphone button down, where she's like, okay, so you're going to do what you always do and betray your coven, and I get the bodies. I was like, oh. And then they all said, what does that mean? And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And that also would explain how she was able to use Mrs. Hart's body, essentially, to be transported with that spell. Do you think I'm on to something?
Can we? I just say, like, her appearing from the gray, from the ground, very Sam Raimi-like, I felt. Yes. Oh my God. Again, I was like freaked out by that whole sequence. That was great.
It looked just like Wanda when she went through the portal after she got wrecked in Multiverse of Madness and she had to reconstitute herself and do the evil Daddy, like reapportion her arms and unbreak her shoulder and all that other wild stuff. And you can even see the flower in the photo I have here for you watching on YouTube, the flower that they used for the spell that Rio then offered to her in her hair for the transformation when they got into their 70s outfits.
Can we mention that, you know, just the body language, like you said, of her, the way she was contorting her body, you mm-hmm. know, in a lot of those scenes where, you know, Nebula's wrists are, you know, popping back into place and things like that, that's all CGI. I think when you're watching her, you know, actually kind of contort her own body and kind of stutter her gait a little bit, I mean, it's just more impactful. It's more subtle. And I think that's something that the MCU misses.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, beginning with New Japan Sakura Genesis from April of 2017 and the highly controversial match between Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. Later this month, we'll go back to October of 1987 with WWF's Saturday Night's main event on NBC, including title matches between Hulk Hogan and Sika, Honky Tonk Man against Randy Savage, and the Hart Foundation facing the Young Stallions. The month rounds out with WWE's Money in the Bank 2011, with CM Punk challenging John Cena for the WWE Championship in Chicago after the Pipe Bomb promo. Plus, Karen Peterson presents a special show focusing on the Queen of Villains on Netflix, weekly editions of Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course, ad-free shows, news and audio updates sent directly to your email, and so much more beginning at $6 per month, which provides instant 30-day access and extensive archives going back to 2017. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Yeah. I mean, even with this, when you look at Jack Schaefer as a showrunner and the work she's done to integrate, and I'd love for you to kind of carry the ball with this, Julie, the idea of witches over in through history. When mm-hmm. we see Rio, she starts to skip like Dorothy down the yellow brick road. And to your point about the relationship and the subtlety, you even hear the other witches in the coven say, I don't know whether to be afraid of her or ask for her number.
Yes. That is precisely the correct reaction. Most bisexual women will tell you we have never met a bad decision wrapped up in a hot body that we don't like. But yeah.
Now, what do you think of the... Oh, go ahead.
I love how she's, you know, kind of playing this character. I love every little... you know, every little nod, every little movement that she's done. And I think the director has done a great job of just really honing that in to its finest little nod.
And WH, how about you? What did you think of Aubrey Plaza's role so far as Rio Vidal and kind of the way she has a spell on the rest of the coven right now?
I think it's perfect casting. Like, you know, because I mean, Aubrey Plaza does have like kind of that reputation as an actor to be kind of like quirky, and you don't know necessarily what to make of her, like whether it's in like, you know, her kind of breakthrough role in Parks and Recs, and then in Marvel adjacent in Legion as one of the people as one of the people in David Haller's head that turns out to be the Shadow King. And I think it's, you know, like Jack Schaefer, when casting this, probably thought, who can we get someone like audiences and maybe the other characters don't know what to make of this character? Because a lot of like, you know, the only person who knows what to make of Rio is Agatha. And then Agatha's not telling, right? Because a lot of the mystery box elements of the show, each episode, are things that we're trying to figure out of her past, of Agatha's past. And obviously Rio's a big part of her past, and she knows a lot of things, but she's not telling, and Agatha's not telling. So, and that's part of the appeal of the show for me, is like, as we get to each episode, we find out a lot about each of our characters. Like last week's episode was about Jen. And then we learn more about like what happened to her, how she lost her powers to some guy. And was it in Boston?
In Boston, yeah.
In Boston. And then we learn a lot about Alice and her mother, Lorna, in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I think next week is Lilia's episode. And I'm really fascinated about that, because like we get the hint of her like being able to see in the future and making predictions about what's happening to different characters. And I feel like it's going to be very much like one of my favorite Lost episodes, the Constant, which is the Desmond episode, which is like, oh, okay. Like if we get something like that with Lilia, like I'm really excited to see how they pull that off. But Aubrey Plaza's Rio is really good, because like I just want to see what we're gonna find out, if anything, actually, in the last episode of this season. And and she's, I find her just mesmerizing. I really missed her last episode, but she came back. It's okay. It absence made the heart grow fonder, and her being back in this episode was really great.
Now, when we talk about the coven and kind of the test and trials, one of the pieces we see is that as Miss Wu thinks about her mom in the previously section, they talk about her interpreting everything her mom said about the road and her career as a musician is really mental illness. But when you have this image here, you see that the lyric, which is the title of the episode, "If I can't reach you, let my song teach you all you need to keep our love alive." Them being in their witch's saw trap of having to sing her mother's song with the spirit and verve necessary to get out of the fire trap. Julie, what did you think of that? And given like your history and your background with like the occult and things like that, how do you think they've been integrating it in a way that seems not just, again, like CGI magic, but like practical magic?
So it's actually very thoughtful. I loved the whole thing with mentioning that mustard seeds were commonly known as Eye of Newt. In the last episode when Jen was mixing her little potions. One of the things that I would mention here is that, you know, when you're talking about the elements in magic, you know, fire is used for purification. Fire is used in things like smudging, in things that, you know, offer both protection and, you know, distilling things to their purest form. And I really appreciate that little kind of the fact that the song wasn't so much a spell as it was, you know, a way to reconnect with, you know, her mother's craft, you know, and really reach down into that, you know, natural generational magic. And I think that's something in witchcraft in general that you'll hear talked about a lot, is a lot of ancestry worship, a lot of calling on your ancestors, calling on the spirits of those who have gone before us. It's kind of that connection between the veil that, you know, in a lot of religions, you know, once someone goes on, they go to heaven or they go into the next life. You know, we kind of see that thread is, you know, still being connected more so. So it's really interesting to see that, you know, the fire wasn't this kind of like destructive, you know, element after all, you know, that the demon was of fire was destroyed by fire. So you kind of get to see both sides of it. And it was brilliant.
And WH, what about you? What'd you think about like the way they've made everything practical? If you remember during WandaVision, this is actually a great illustration of the thing Wanda was so annoying to Agatha regarding, because she could do spells without sigils. She could just do it. It was chaos magic, and that meant she's the Scarlet Witch. What have you thought of like each episode's journey, especially led by Teen, because he was the only one that had a spell book out of the crew?
Yeah, he like Agatha seems to like dismiss the craft of witchcraft, it seems, but Teen is like, no, I want to learn it. That's his whole goal, right? Like he wants to become a witch by learning it. Through studying and maybe being apprenticed to this coven, and I love the fact that it's revealed that Lorna made this song as a way to protect Alice from the curse that's plagued her family for generations. It's and like they mentioned this, it's, oh my god, you're part of a generational curse. I didn't know that. Now you got us wrapped up into it. It's like, you know, the grudge movies from Japan, Ju-on, right? It's like it passes down and you can't escape it. So, and the fact that, oh, she made this song, she became a rock singer and made this song to become a hit. So like it's always playing somewhere in the world. So Alice is always protected as long as the song is playing somewhere. And it's playing on radio. Someone's humming it. Someone's just random person in Bulgaria is singing it, or in Poughkeepsie is singing it. Alice is always protected. I love the fact that they play on that whole hysteria of records being played backwards to activate the curse in this trial, right? It's because Teen plays the record player, but it's playing in reverse, and that activates the curse, which is like the whole paranoia thing that they did, that they had about Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven and all these fucking Motley Crue records and all this other stuff, right? So I thought that was really fun. And the way the writing is so good, because they just play with these kind of like tropes and stereotypes of like, you know, like Satanism and things
Satanic
from like
panic
and from the 80s and the 70s. And I love it. It's just so fun, and it's smart, but it doesn't detract. Like, that's a great shot. It doesn't detract from how frightening this show can be at times with the imagery and like the way that the actors, you know, like play the roles. It's fantastic.
And I love that they dive into, like I mentioned before, some of the history of kind of some of these other old stories. So this was a very Alice in Wonderland moment. We already had, when they entered the house at first, you had Agatha scream out, don't drink anything, don't eat anything, don't touch anything. And then as they go through the machinations that her and Vidal were going through, all of a sudden you get the noise. And he's like, well, why would you do that? And he lifts it up. And again, that horror, that moment as they zoom. And I wish you all, we have it as a still shot. But when you watch the episode, it zooms through the hole to kind of add into that foreboding, that claustrophobia. And I just thought that was great. Now, when they escape, thanks to the song they play, their version of it, again, it's a very amazing set and a very amazing. I would love when this is over, when they do their assembled or disassembled, I want to see the B-roll of this ballad that they went through, because it looked like they had a ball making it, Julie.
Oh, I mean, it looked like they were having a blast. It was really just, it looked like a fun party to be at. Minus, you know, the whole satanic curse and fire demon.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, how was the play, right? Like, it's big deal.
I would sing with Patti LuPone if I had to face a fire demon.
And I think that fire, and I like this image, is kind of like a transition to it, allowed them to start to bond as a coven. And seeing them, whether it's Agatha after they realize Teen's injured, putting her jacket across his body as he heals, asking Vidal to heal him and not to take him, essentially. She screamed, no, don't. And so again, another moment is like, if she is death, that's a good time for her to kind of step in and kind of go to work and do the Birdman hand rub and get another soul for the collection. But I love this image because they're just so laid back. They just all seem, with each episode, both more trusting of each other and less trusting of Agatha's BS. Not because they think she's going to betray them, but because they realize a lot of this is a wall. And she does a great job. Where's the image here? Because I know, WH, you wanted to talk about this a little bit. When they start talking about their scars. And she talks about the knitting needle to the elbow. You ever hear the Daughters of Liberty? And so I'm gonna kick back and let you all talk a little bit about the Daughters of Liberty, because I have a few images of versions of them, but floor is yours, WH, and then I'll tag in the Julie.
So the Daughters of Liberty is like a group that was introduced in the Ta-Nehisi Coates run on Captain America. And like, you know, Steve's having a lot of trouble as usual. Most writers like to put Steve in trouble with being, you know, the identity of Captain America and having trouble with the government, blah, 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 blah. But in this run, he's helped by various superheroines, including longtime ally, of course, Sharon Carter. And the returning, should I spoil it? Peggy Carter is this character, the Dryad. And then we also have Echo. You see Echo. We have Jessica Drew as Spider-Woman. We have the White Tiger. We have Mockingbird. And I forget, is that Pepper? Instead of Patriot the rescue Alpha. Armor, she's in the Iron Patriot armor. Sue Storm's in this as well in this group. Misty Knight's in this. Anytime you get like, you know, Misty, I love Misty Knight. So like anytime you get back, have I ever told you, like, I would love to, if I was a comic writer, I would do a miniseries starring the Winter Soldier, Cable, and Misty Knight. And if you can guess what the connection is,
one-armed bandits.
Well, you know, like Cable and Bucky, left arm, Misty's right arm. Her bionic arm is on her right. So,
ooh, if the left don't get you, the right will.
Something like that. I just think that would be a fun, just because they all have bionic arms. Anyways, so like for Agatha to mention this group, like, okay, that's, did she actually fight? I think they're just using the name, but it'd be cool if, like, did she actually fight Jessica Drew and Mockingbird and Susan Storm? That's cool. That happened.
Yeah, and I think, especially with the world of the multiverse, you can get any versions of this, because we're starting to get most of these women as real world MCU characters. And so bringing back the actor that played Misty, of course, you've mentioned the Daughters of the Dragon is another one of your desired series to be in the MCU hopper. Julie, what are your thoughts on the Daughters of Liberty, and any particular favorite characters or anyone you'd like to see play them?
Always an Echo girl. I thought Alacqua Cox killed it in the Echo series. And I love that they kind of took her powers and changed them into more of like a magic, you know, an ancestry magic based, you know, power set. So, I mean, I think that that might be a nice little segue in. It might not be, especially with the Spider-Verse and, you know, Jessica Drew being in the Spider-Verse and, you know, us not really knowing what's coming up with the Fantastic Four. I think for right now, it's just going to be one of those super fans will get their little nod. But I have to say that I'm not sure if it's going to be like a direct thing. I mean, I see you have Echo up there now. So I see you are also hopeful that these two ladies get to share the screen, because that would be an absolute dream. I can't state enough how much I loved Alacqua Cox as Echo. And I think that she really was the embodiment of everything that character should be, you know, obvious beyond the obvious ones, with her deafness. It's just that, you know, with Agatha Harkness and Catherine Hahn, it was like, boom, you know, lightning struck, you got this perfect embodiment of the character. So I would love to see how those two ladies kind of square off.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun. And I like the setup here. For those of you watching on YouTube, I have the image that I put up before, this time with the text from "And the Daughters of Liberty will rise to meet it." Like, always a good hardcore like sentence end, next scene, let's rock. And speaking of rocking, I think one of the things that rocked me at the end of this episode, when they were dealing with Teen's injury and they were talking about the idea of Patti LuPone has been very scary in the background in these first four episodes, because she's giving them, much like at the end, if you recall, WH2, when we were watching Loki, she's giving them the ending, because she keeps having these moments of lucidity where she is speaking to them as if it's in the future. And whatever episode it is where she has to say the thing she's saying in each of these episodes, I do not look forward to it.
No, I'm totally looking forward to it, because I love like time jumping and like things like where, you know, like someone's existing in different, you know, versions of their time stream. And that thing, you know, that's what I loved about Loki. And I'm really fascinated by like what, you know, that, she, you know, Lily is the witch of divination, so she can see into the future. So like she's seeing things in the future, and these are all going to play out probably in her episode. I'm hoping it is. And we're going to, and it's, and I'm, I, if it's next, I think it's next week. I'm assuming it's next week that I'm here for it. And, no, I'm not. I know what you mean though, Rich. Like it's very kind of like has a sinister undertone, all these like, you know, times where she becomes says something that's what are you talking about? That she's obviously referencing something that's happening in her future, but it's happening to her at the same time. So she's kind of like Dr. Manhattan that way as well, right? So she's got that going on. It's all good. I like Three of Swords. What does that mean? I don't know. Like I'm not a tarot expert, so I can't remember.
I was just going to point that out, actually.
Okay.
So the Three of Swords kind of points to the pain you experience as you're, you know, traveling through life. It usually ends with, you know, sorrows that teach you lessons. So that could either be something that's, you know, coming up. I mean, I don't think they're going to get off lightly. Or they could be talking about his, you know, physical wounds. But either way, I heard the Three of Swords and I was just instantaneously like, oh, they went there. They're pulling out the tarot decks and everything. So again, bravo to the witchcraft nods.
Man, I mean, and then she said when she talked about the coven, because when they summoned her, one of the things that Rio said was that the magic called the easiest path. When Lilia wrote down the list, Earth Witch was on there, but it also, she also said out loud Three of Pentacles. Do you have anything for that one, Julie?
Pentacles. You had to ask me my weakest suit. so pentacles usually mean blessings.
Okay.
Or, you know, fill in your cup, things to come. Hang on, let me pull out my handy dandy tarot guide. In this case, it looks like, you know, it usually means either teamwork, collaboration, or learning, or in reverse, it's disharmony. So, you know, they could be looking to join together, band together, and get what they all want, or it could be talking about the chaos that's going to come to them as they go. And I mean, let's face it, Rio is at this point walking chaos and disharmony for this group. She's kind of thrown them off their stride a little bit, which I kind of enjoy.
And wouldn't you know it, I don't know if you knew this, Julie, but you probably did. They have promotional tarot cards for the series that they're going to sell or are selling.
I totally don't have that already pre-ordered. Like 4 copies.
And I don't know about you guys, but looking at death, that looks a lot like the knife that Rio has.
It is. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, for a lot of discussion about her being the embodiment of death in this show comes from, and a lot of other hints as well. But yeah, this is just such a great marketing, campaign, because like a lot of people watching this who enjoy it, like Julie, are gonna, I'm totally buying that. That's a great moment. That's great. Like thing that you can use probably in real life. And then, but it's also like, hey, it's part of this show that I'm really enjoying. So.
Yeah. So we get the final scene and it's Rio and Agatha talking, and she being Agatha, it seems like she's willing to kind of lean into restarting the relationship. And right when she grabs Rio's face, Rio essentially said, the boy isn't yours. And that's when they kind of break off and it's kind of still a little chaotic. Julie, what did you think of that scene and how they played it in terms of like the sensuality and also the menace that it seems like Videl has over her? And then also the penance she seems to feel, because as she mentioned at the fire, her scar is a person, which we all clearly as an audience assume it's going to be Agatha because of whatever she had to do as part of her quote unquote job.
So, I mean, more so than even just like the sensual tension, which has been between them, obviously, since the very first time Aubrey Plaza's character walked into that office, you know, as the cops. It's been there, but this was the first moment that you really kind of get to see this like peeled back intimacy between them. You know, obviously Rio doesn't need to wonder what is on Agatha's mind after Teen gets injured. It's pretty clear that, you know, Agatha's regretting some decisions that she may or may not have made with her own child. And, you know, whether this is another fake out, or whether, you know, Teen really is Billy Kaplan or Wiccan. Either way, I think it could be completely satisfying and in line with the way the show goes. It could mean when she said he's not yours that, you know, Agatha gave up that right. Or it could just mean that out and out, this is not her kid. Either way, I think that, you know, it's natural, especially as a mom, when you see somebody who's so like your own child, whether you intentionally think it or not. You know, I remember watching a horror movie where there was a little blue-eyed blonde boy who looked remarkably like my son at that age in peril. And, you know, my heart just stops. So, you know, she sees this boy with these loose dark curls and, you know, these deep eyes. And how could she not, you know, instantly go to that place in her mind? And I think that only someone who really loves you can really see to that like heart of what exact, where the root of those feelings are. And I think that, you know, her and Aubrey Plaza just played this like a symphony. And I mean, you see that tug at both of these women's heart. I mean, it's heartbreaking for both of them. You know, it's heartbreaking for Agatha to hear it, and it's heartbreaking for Rio to say it. And I mean, just the casual touches, the framing of it, you know, there's nothing spicy or sexy in kind of like that siren way that we had in the last scene. You know, you just have these dirty, you know, tired women, and you still see that love, you see that connection, you see that depth and intimacy between them. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's not overplayed for the fanboys or, you know, hey, two chicks get to get it on kind of way. It's just, it's this really authentic intimacy. And no matter where that goes in this series, I'm happy that they showed it to us.
And WH, when you look at this and you see the questions being asked for down the road, what's standing out for you as we look at these next episodes? What questions do you still have revolving the rest of the coven?
I think teen's identity is probably really high on the list. And also, like, what ultimately is Agatha's end game, right? Because then the other thing I'm wondering is Wanda going to show up too? Because I really think it has to come full circle, and I can't think of a better vehicle for her to come back to the MCU from Multiverse of Madness than this show at the end of the show somehow, and maybe have some tie-in to Vision Quest down the line as well. I think if you don't bring back Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda, I think you're really squandering, you know, a massive amount of storytelling possibilities and a great performance from such a great actor in Elizabeth Olsen. So, yeah, I want to see a connection between the show and to WandaVision. I want to know who Teen is. I'm really hoping it's Billy Kaplan. I'm really hoping it's Wiccan. And then it's, again, another nod to, like, the Young Avengers eventually happening down the line as well.
Now, I'll throw it out to both of you. Do you think it needs to be the Wanda that died in WandaVision, or could it be one of the other variants, like the housewife mom that just wanted to protect her kids that now has to go the witch's road to gain the power that was lost by the Scarlet Witch Prime? So that way you have this other Wanda falling in love with this lost Vision, and it's like two ships passing, but they're still trying to get to the same port. That's a weird analogy, but I think you guys are picking up what I'm laying down.
Definitely. I mean, for me, the Wanda that was in the Multiverse of Madness, I mean, I know obviously that they didn't actually get to see, you know, full WandaVision before that was written. It kind of felt disjointed from the Wanda that we got in WandaVision. And while I could see her heading in that direction slightly, it kind of just seemed like such an all about abrupt tonal change that I would actually like to see, you know, that moment of tipping point, you know, between those two medias before we really get back into Wanda. And quite frankly, I don't think this show needs Wanda to survive. A nod would be nice. But I kind of think Scarlet Witch is just kind of extra. You know, we already have the cake. We don't need an extra 10 pounds of icing here.
If we do get this some kind of connection and appearance from Wanda, I want it to be the WandaVision Wanda, because I want the redemption, because Multiverse of Madness is very much, you know, the equivalent of Scarlet Witch's, you know, House of M, right? What she did in House of M, No More Mutants, and then coming back from that, which she did there. And this, from her almost destroying the multiverse, and then let's see her come back from that and kind of get redemption, because I really like the character. So I would love to see that version somehow survive the destruction of Wondergore Mountain, and, you know, come back and you know, kind of like, okay, that's not me anymore. That was me. I want to forge a new path. And with the revelation that possibly the kids that she had in WandaVision are real, and they exist now in the form of, say, maybe Teen as Wiccan, and then we get Speed later on, that would be great. And then if you somehow tie it to Doctor Doom, What the fuck?
Oh, man. So now, overall for the episode, sounds like both of you guys liked it. You'd recommend folks to watch?
Oh, most definitely. Oh. So great. I'm going to go rewatch the performance again. I thought it was so amazing. I just want to watch that again.
They would be missing the boat, Julie, if they didn't give you an opportunity to sell at your store a vinyl version of all of those songs.
You know, I honestly think that I would invest in a record player and have it playing all day long on a loop. And maybe backwards. Even backwards, trying to summon some you know, fire demons. We'll see. I loved everything about this episode. I thought it was nuanced. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a little bit scary. Obviously, WH and I watch very, very different horror movies if he was terrorized by that demon. But overall, I think this is just such a phenomenal show, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
Excellent. So in the words of one of my favorite people, you don't have to take our word for it. Additionally, as always, thanking you guys for taking the time to go to forum.postwrestling.com to put your feedback on here. And of course, this is a free episode thanks to Wei and John, because I wanted to make sure Julie's store and her mission and her husband's vision for what they do at the store is something that all of you got a chance to hear. So thanks again for those guys for that. So we're going to start with Manny from Pacoima. And so the plot thickens. Whomstev is Rio, really? How did she know Teen is not Agatha's little children? Why did Agatha say don't when she looked at Rio when the coven was trying to heal Teen? And will the Fonz be able to jump over a man-eating shark? Tune in next week. Another fantastic episode, but of course, they would have that 70s show immediately after the episode where Mrs. Hart dies. Once again, I had chills when the coven broke out into song, but my main event was when Lilia looked at Alice and said, oh, you poor thing. I immediately jumped out of my seat, hearing her turn into Mrs. Lovett right before my eyes. Musical theater! This show continues to be a blast. For my final question, which role would each of you take in the MCU later coven? I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and until then, follow me, my friend, to the glory in the end. Julie, I will let you go first as the guest. Which role in the current coven that you see would you like to have in our MCU later coven?
I mean, ultimately, I think I would love to be Jennifer, mm-hmm. but I am not that cool. I am not that healing. I definitely identify with, other than Agatha, I identify a lot with Alice. You know, kind of that balls to the walls, making sure everyone around you is safe. You know, knocking out a shoplifter. I've been tempted to do that a time or two. But I mean, really, I'd have a hard time choosing between them. But yeah, I'd have to say Alice.
Okay. WH, how about you?
I'm going to say Alice, too.
Okay.
I just really liked her in this episode. And I think she's, for me, the most relatable, not because she's Asian, too. But like, I get, you know.
What?
I know that's what Manny from Pacoima was trying to get at. I know he's trying to draw that out. I see your insidious plots in your posts here at Post Wrestling Forum. Just kidding. But yeah, no, I think she, like, this episode especially really brought me forward to, like, yeah, she's kind of a standout character for me.
And for me, I would pick Lilia, because a lot of the way I think runs far afield, and sometimes I do get lost in the woods. I'd love to get lost in the woods and then in the future. But I definitely have had people look at me the way that sometimes the rest of the coven looks at her when they're asking. It's like, I was like, where do you go? I love that sentence where she just looked at her and said, where do you go? And she's like, huh? And that's me in a nutshell. Ah, second cup of the day. Hi, everyone. The leaves on the road at the beginning instantly brings me back to when I'm a kid in autumn, and sidewalks while walking to from school are absolutely buried in deciduous leaves up to my knees. And then the shuffling through making that sound and smelling reminiscent the smell of fall leaves. Ooh, I didn't know that was a word. I hope the other people have those memories too. Plot-wise, I like this episode the least, but having the episode being about the baggage that everyone carries made it my favorite. It was good for character development, and it makes me more invested in it as a proper TV show, not just an MCU show. I like the camera work in this episode too, including the split diopter and the placing of some kind of light in a lot of the scenes while the characters sorted stuff out. Thanks for clarifying that bit about Lilia. Interested to see how all of her visions are supposed to come together. I also think her backstory would be the most interesting, but they all have so many good questions that seem to remain unanswered even if there's progress. E.g., why was there a hereditary curse there in the first place? Maybe next step we find out about the dude that took Jen's powers. Maybe that's Mephisto. I'm kidding, and I'll happily admit I was wrong about every single one of my theories from last week, like how Rio definitely shouldn't be Agatha's kid. Yeah, that would have been really weird if she was her kid.
Yeah, that would that's a West Virginia thing.
Manny raised such a good point about hearing killing Mrs. Foreman before the retro trial. But imagine if Red Foreman showed up as Mephisto. Listen, he was already one of my favorite bad guys, Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop. So if anybody could be a bad guy, Red Foreman can do it. Can you fly, Bobby? I still have that burned in my head.
I'll buy that for $1.
Yeah, or the boop, 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 and then he shoots. Oh, that's rough. That's a rough scene. While I'm being silly, when Jen said it was an old-ass curse, I couldn't help but wonder if ass curses were the next trial and everyone would be running for a bathroom that's perpetually occupied. That is a seven circle of hell thing right there. And now, our good friend Blind Avenger. Hello, all, and welcome to the Flesh Blood joining the podcast. Okay, maybe calling someone Fresh Blood isn't the first impression I should make. I just figured it fit the show we're covering here. Yep, well done. Anyway, let me just get it out of the way. The rock version of the Ballad of the Witch's Road slaps hard. Having them play the song to fend off a curse was inspired, but I'd be lying if I didn't say the idea didn't remind me of a Tenacious D song tribute. Yeah, even down to the demon in the shiny demon in the middle of the road, he had the wings like that. But did Jack, I know they both sound nothing alike, but did Jack Black say the song we sang on that fateful night, it didn't actually sound anything like this song? So in my headcanon now, they totally played this version of the ballad and didn't realize it was plagiarism. Hashtag it's all connected. I love that, Blind Avenger. As for the rest of the episode, it was filled with something we haven't seen much of yet. Agatha showed vulnerability and started letting her guard down in several instances. Although she made sure not to expose it to the others, the cracks are showing. I'm guessing this will continue with her growing closer to everyone as the series progresses. Thinking of this also scares me because it surely means more witches are about to meet their demise. It will just hurt that much more when we get great scenes of sisterhood like the one by the campfire. I'd also note, too, Blind Avenger, Agatha mentioned when she completed the road last time, one other witch made it with her. And so, that's tough. That it really is tough if that happens again. As the mystery of Teen continues, we get a little more detail on that front. They seemingly want us to think that Agatha is behind the sigil, but Jess forgets, though my wife has a theory. What if Teen cast it on himself to make sure his identity wasn't found out? He obviously wants something from the road, so it makes sense. Teen's past is obviously mysterious, but he seems to remember some details at times while forgetting other things at other moments. That murkiness would make sense if he was the one who cast it on himself too. Given who he's rumored to be, I'm anxious to see how it all comes together and gets adapted for the MCU. I'm also interested to find out how Agatha treats him now that she believes he is not her son. Word to Billie Jean. I saw someone theorizing she didn't give up her kid for the Darkhold, but went after the book to try to resurrect him instead. This would also explain why she was so interested in seeing whether or not Wanda could resurrect Sparky way back in WandaVision. She wants her sings Chili's song, Get Ready. Baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back. My God, Blind Avenger. That is like a dad joke par excellence. I wish I could comment on the visuals in the episode since I've heard they were really good, but I'm stuck here living the gimmick. Yes, for those who aren't aware, like Julie here, Blind Avenger actually is blind. He was sighted when he was born as he lost his vision. So he's watching this with his wife and he gets like the different cues, but it's he's one of our favorite commenters because he's given us a different perspective of every show we review.
Yeah, I can definitely see why.
Mm-hmm. He's great. Either way, the storytelling continues to be stellar and has me counting down the days until episode 5. As always, enjoy yourselves a crisp, ice-cold cans of Canada Dry. Sino really popped me, no pun intended, by having that cherry Canada Dry last week, by the way. Until next time, make mine MCU later. Park Mark R. Out. Brap, brap. As always, welcome. And you guys will get your little thank you in the mail. And finally, Crooked Letter 9, Mr. Muggin. Episode 4 had a musical number in the center of it, and it was pretty dope. Rio must have an agenda being the rabble-rouser of the coven. The sexual tension between her and Agatha can be cut with a knife, the one she has potentially. I got a kick out of the set design, and the record player playing the song backwards felt very, very Led Zeppelin-like. Agatha avoiding talking about losing her son has come to a head in the coming weeks. Another solid episode. And like I said, as always, thank you guys for taking the time to write your feedback at forum.postwrestling.com. We always welcome it and appreciate you. Now, before we get out of here, I want to welcome to the MCU Later family and appreciate Julie for taking the time tonight. I know it's been a while, and I want to give you an opportunity. I didn't preface you with this, but I had a couple of the things I saw as like upcoming events that you guys are putting on. And if you want to just talk to them, always doing something. And where is it? There it is. This one is really cool. So floor is yours, Julie. Anything else you want to talk about? I'll try to bring it up in the background as you do.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, thank you so much for having me. I was a little like nervous when we first talked about this because I hadn't seen any of the show yet. But once I did, I was really pleasantly surprised. So I'm really glad to be here. I hope you do have me back. I would love to talk to you guys more about this and maybe even turn my camera on. Gasp. Thanks for warning me about that, by the way. But yeah, so one thing I have to say is that, you know, whether you just watch MCU shows or maybe you read comics as a kid, you are always welcome in our store in Westview, Pennsylvania. We absolutely love, you know, having these chats with everyone that comes through our door. But one of the things that I really would like to give a shout out to, actually more than a shout out, a little bit of a memory. I recently had my uncle Gary Welsh pass. He was involved in a motorcycle accident at 79. So he lived a full life. And he was one of those people that always, you know, kind of inspired us to work hard for what we wanted. And this comic shop was, you know, always my dream. So I'm glad that, you know, he got to see that happen with me. And, you know, my uncle was always a Superman fan because Superman was always the, you know, the icon that he looked out for. You know, with his passing, you know, we're not taking anything for granted now. So, you know, come join our family in the shop, you know, share these things with us, but also come join events with us. We're having Dinner and Dragons coming up. Here on the October 13th at the Lincoln Avenue Brewery in Bellevue, PA. It is a 4-course meal paired with the Lincoln Avenue Brewery's own, with their own beers. So I'm super excited to taste all of those. But also, it is a fully interactive live action show. We've got Dixie Sherwood as one of our cast members. She's amazing. She just opened for Chapel Roan here not too long ago. She's so funny, and so is the rest of the cast. If you want to see us make fools of ourselves in dollar store Ren Faire costumes and just really come out and try some great beers and make good memories, we would love to have you. It is a 21 and up only guests available, obviously, because this is alcohol based. Also, it's going to be probably because of my foul mouth, as you may have noticed. I kind of breathe fire over here. But yeah, thank you so much for having me, Rich, and WH. It was wonderful meeting you.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming on, and definitely please come back when we're reviewing Daredevil or anything else. You're more than welcome.
Yeah, definitely will. I would love that. But I will warn you, when anything Daredevil related comes out with me, you're gonna see a whole nother side, guys.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to it. Well, thank you so much, Julie. I appreciate you. WH, before we get out of here, oh, I'm sorry, Julie, did you have any recommendations comics wise?
I'm sorry,
did you have any recommendations comics wise, like any comics you're reading or anything you would recommend folks in either coming to your store or at their local that they should probably start reading because you think it's awesome?
Well, I mean, as you well know, I'm a huge horror fan. We just had one of my absolute favorite horror stories wrap up and come out and trade, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees by Horvath. it is, if Richard Scarry did the most bloody, gory, horrible serial killer tale that you can imagine, it's this pastel nightmare, and it's everything I love. So that's something that, you know, I've already sold through 3 shipments of. I definitely highly recommend it. Another one of my ongoings, yep, there we go. That's one of the variant covers. Another one that I definitely recommend right now is the Daredevil run by Saladin Ahmad has been amazing. So good. So has Chip Zdarsky's Batman, always a favorite of mine. But mainly if you come in, just let me know what you're reading, and I guarantee we can find something that's going to, you know, fit right at home on that bookshelf of yours.
Thank you so much. Now, Mr. Park, anything you have
to plug? Well, we're going to talk about one of my other shows is, of course, The Long and Winding Railroad. Look back at 1990s All Japan Pro Wrestling. And then, you know, in honor of the fact that if you go to Japan and you're involved in the wrestling business, if you go to the Ribera Steakhouse in Tokyo, one of 2 locations, the bigger one is the better one. They both got tons of pictures of wrestlers from the 70s on. Some of them have been canceled. Might be the only place you get to see some of these wrestlers in public is on the wall in these photographs. But yes, we are going to release Mr. Dickie Bird over at chop-tees.com says, WH, we're going to make a jacket. We're going to make a satin jacket that you in the style of the Ribera jacket. And on the front, you can see we got the Post logo plus the name of the show here. Let me zoom in there. Oh, let me zoom in some more. Wow, technology. The Long Winding Railroad in this wonderful font here. The Post Wrestling P. And then, you know, we got the original Pillars t-shirt. Yes, I got permission from myself to publish this fucking thing. So this is limited. And it's in pre-order mode right now. Let me see if I can get out of this. Oh, crap. How do I get out of this? Do I have to click on something? Oh, there you go. Okay, so it's $117. You can convert that into Canadian. If you're in Canada, it will do it automatically. The website does that. You can get select sizes. So it's in pre-order mode. So whatever size you pre-order will be guaranteed made. And these are not print made to order. This will be stored in a warehouse, whatever sizes we make. And once those are gone, they are gone. So this is a limited time item only. And yeah, you can, if you pre-order it and you don't like the size, you're going to upsize, Chop Tees will take care of that for you. If you don't like it, Chop Tees will take care of it for you. So you're as a consumer, you're 100% protected. So check it out. I think, Rich, people in the industry, in the wrestling business, like the Long and Winding Railroad. They like the branding. They like to wear it on national television. And then everyone, once they see people in the industry wearing my fucking t-shirts on Instagram or on national fucking television, they're all like, where can I get one? Well, Chop-Tees is the only place you can get one. And you can only get it for a limited time. And if you come back, like, say someone wears it on television and you're like, oh, it's like a year from now, it might be gone. So don't come crying to me, because like, unless we just charge double and I get more money, then we might bring it back. But anyways, chop-tees.com. Go to the Long and Winding Railroad section, and then this is still available for pre-order. And I'm excited to get mine soon in the mail. And our good friend Mr. Avian has promised that more cool stuff is coming. But this is like kind of his fall project, or these jackets and kind of the varsity jackets that he's doing for Poison Rana and some other brands on the site.
Excellent. And then I know from a comic standpoint, you also had this delightful work.
This came out a while ago, but they re-released it recently because of Batman Day this year. It's Elmer Fudd meets Batman. You think, how's that going to work? Well, when you have the writing of Tom King and the incredible artistry of Lee Weeks, it works. And it's hunting season. And Elmer Fudd is hunting Batman. If you think that does, that can't possibly work, well, you'd be wrong. It does. It works so well. Go read it. Go to your go to KNJ Comics and Games of Comics and go pick up a copy there if you're in West Pennsylvania.
Yeah, definitely. I have to agree with WH on this one. It's one of my all-time favorite Batman stories. I'm not going to lie. That and Long Halloween. So they got me on both fronts this Batman day.
Yeah, so or if you're not in West Pennsylvania, just go to your local comic store. Go support the physical stores. Go buy a comic from them. Don't steal anything, please. Or we have a baseball bat behind the counter waiting for your head. I'm just joking. Or am I? I don't know. But anyways, check it out, Batman Elmer Fudd from Tom King. A lot of people think he's one of the greatest Batman writers of all time. And I say he's in the pantheon. He's not my favorite Batman writer of all time, but he's up there.
And before we get out of here, before we let you finish up shop, I do want to do a quick edit. When I was assisting while Julie was chatting, I hit the wrong link. And so here is Mr. Welsh's obituary and photo. I had the wrong Gary Welsh, and so my apologies for that. I think this was an awesome episode. Thank you, Julie, again for coming. Condolences for your uncle, and I look forward to hopefully, if football allows, popping in and seeing this awesome opportunity you guys are given in terms of like the Dungeons and Dragons show. But yeah, this is great.
Definitely get your tickets, sit at my table.
Oh. Yeah, if I can go, I'm definitely doing that. before we get out of here, as always, WH.
Yeah, it's a freeloader episode, huh?
Yeah, it's a freeloader. It's for all good right. reason.
You
it's
know what? I had brunch with John Pollock and Wei Ting, and we talked about a myriad of topics, including, you know, you're Selfridge, how great you are, how great Neil Flanagan is.
Of course.
John Pollock's always putting over, like, Neil, when I talk to Neil privately, he's always like, make sure they say nice things about me, WH. And I'm like, dude, like, I don't have to say nothing. And John Pollock's going to bring your name up at some point in a positive way. He's listening. He's always watching this on his 47 inch fucking 4K TV. You know, he watches us on YouTube. Unlike Brandon from New Jersey.
Man, shots fired.
Anyways, but Neil, they said nice things about Neil. They said nice things. You know, they mentioned Benno. They mentioned our friend Benno over at Grapple. So it's nice. Yeah. It's nice seeing those boys in real life.
IRL. Yeah, Richard's across the pond.
That's right. Anyways, but until I see them for brunch again, and all you freeloaders better come over to the Patreon side, patreon.com/postwrestling, the Post Wrestling Cafe, for less than the price of like a fucking Starbucks coffee. You can have access to the archives. You can get access to MCU later, to some of the more the all the New Japan reviews by the Empress Karen Peterson and Big Man Bruce Lord, the bombastic one Bruce Lord, and of course this show, Rich Fan, myself, myriad of wonderful guests. Well, sometimes wonderful. Some of them are never coming back to the show. Just kidding. No, am I? Anyways, we'll all.
You know you love me.
No, not you, Julie. Trust me, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about. Anyways, we'll all MCU later. Goodbye.